Welcome to Tabletop Tommies. I'm Johnny.
And I'm Phil.
And in today's episode, we're going to be talking about the international meta, the differences we see in the way bolt action's played in many different countries. In order to discuss that, we do have a very special guest on. Phil, would you like to introduce our special guest for the episode?
Yeah, so we're joined today by Aaron Russell, who's joining us through the magic of the internet from Australia. He recently won CanCon. He's also been over in the UK, played in Not Five Steps Back, which he won. And he also played last weekend in the Danish Nationals, which he also won. So we thought it'd be great to hear from Aaron, somebody who's, you know, played overseas and also won three, you know, highly competitive events over the last few weeks. So welcome, Aaron.
Awesome. Thanks. Thanks, Phil. Thanks, Johnny. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
So you won CanCon. How did that come about? And what nation were you playing? Many questions about that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so CanCon is, for those, I guess, that may not know, we're probably often in our own little world down here, but it's our biggest sort of national event. But I have actually played in that the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But this year I took Romanians just for something different.
Okay, nice.
And yeah, they were a bit of fun, actually. I've had the army for a while, but I just haven't played it in any sort of big events or anything, but I thought I'd pull them out and give them a whirl.
Were you playing Axis or Allied Romanians there?
I was actually playing Axis, and I was just using their standard sort of army list rules. I wasn't using anything out of Case Blue. There's some nice little rules in there, but I hadn't really explored that. So, and I think they were only released like just before CanCon, I believe, from memory. But yeah, so I didn't sort of whip them out, but just the tried and true Romanians with the free howitzer, and that's about it, actually. But yeah.
Yeah,
very impressive winning major competition with OG Romanians. How many players were at CanCon?
I think we started with 72.
Wow.
And then by the time it ran, the field dropped down to 60 something, mid-60s I think it was, which is typical of, you know, I guess most events, but even sort of your larger ones, you're going to have some people drop away, due to getting the flu or something, you know, coming up at the last minute or whatever. But it is our biggest event. So we, in terms of numbers, we'll get more numbers to CanCon than I think any other event in the country.
And am I right in saying it was the same weekend as the WTC in Granada, the first weekend in February?
Yeah, did that cross over with the last weekend in Jan as well? Was it the exact same one?
Yes, it was basically that week, wasn't it? So obviously Australians, there wasn't an Australian team in Granada.
No.
I wonder to what extent that was partly due to CanCon being held in Australia, because it's your national weekend, isn't it? It's the same weekend as Australia weekend and so on. So it's a big celebration, is that right?
Yeah, Australia Day weekend. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're bang on. It'd be pretty hard for us to try and put a team together, I think, on that same weekend for both of those reasons. Yeah. But yeah, we always sort of line it up with whenever the Australia Day public holiday is. So it's sort of that long weekend. That way people can travel there from whatever state they're coming from. And they've got that sort of extra day to get home, with the Monday being the public holiday and that. So it usually works out pretty good, because it's always a sort of 2-day event. So just especially for those people coming into state. And this year, I think we had a couple came all the way over from WA, which is almost like a totally different country.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. And so then how was it? A couple of weeks later, you jumped on the plane and came over to the UK and then Europe.
Yeah. So about a month later, jumped on a plane and headed on over to England. I think when I hopped on the plane, it was 37 degrees. And then when I hopped off in London, it was about 2. That was a bit of a shock to the system, that's for sure.
Sure, yeah. Welcome to England in March, yeah. Cool. And because you'd messaged us last year asking about events coming up in the UK. And so I understand originally you were planning to play in the event up in Stockport, which was the £1,000 prize money event. But that obviously got cancelled fairly close to the weekend itself. Is that right?
Yeah, so I was sort of pretty keen to play some events, I guess, out of the country, and obviously with like some big team international events sort of getting a bit of traction over the last couple of years. Obviously, we don't have any representation, but more than that, I think it was just sort of good to get a bit of a feel for it, and I was due for a holiday anyway, so I kind of meshed it all into one.
Yeah.
But I also didn't really know what sort of events might have been. I figured, obviously, there was all the sort of national events or GTs that all the countries had, but I wanted to sort of line up, maybe get a few in. So, yeah, that's when I reached out to you guys. I probably started upping my, intake or how many bolt action podcasts I was consuming. But I've listened to stuff before and it's great and love the accents as well. So that makes it easy listening. But
thank you.
Yeah, no. So I wanted to see what was out there. And I thought that might be a big event. It didn't sort of pull through.
Yeah.
Which was okay. I was sort of able to troubleshoot and ended up going to Juggernaut event. Mm-hmm. In Nottingham, and then also the Danish nationals as well, which I was sort of always going to anyway.
Yeah,
it was good.
So obviously, not Five Steps Back was the Juggernaut event played with the Juggernaut pack. Was that the first event you'd been to where the Juggernaut pack had been used, or were you used to that? Is that something that's played back in Australia?
No, it was definitely the first time I've been to an event like that, and same with the missions. I think all the missions I'd only played out of the mission, all the missions. I don't think I'd played any of them before.
Okay.
And a lot of the pack was, I was actually really underprepared for that event.
Okay.
And I found myself having to check the pack like 2 minutes before every game to work out what mission we were playing, what the rules were, what we were doing, how we scored objectives. And obviously, you know, different packs, different countries, different states. Some of the things change, right? And we even changed the rules of how an objective could be scored, or how what could even contest an objective. That seems to differ from pack to pack and place to place, and they're important things. So I'm sort of mid game finding myself having to ask the TO just to confirm how an objective is actually scored.
Yeah,
because I hadn't played any sort of the missions in the pack, but I actually quite liked it, to be honest.
Good. We often find in the UK in terms of, say, objectives, so some people play it 3 inches from the middle. Some people will play it touching the objective. And then there's that difference between, for example, does a transport with an infantry unit count as being able to control and all that sort of stuff. So even in the UK, not necessarily just between different countries, different TOs run their events in different ways. So, yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that, in terms of objectives and scoring and that kind of thing, you had to check during the game, let alone before the game started.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I was doing it right, because there'd be nothing worse than thinking you've got all the objectives scored and only to find out, at the end of the game when you're calculating everything that, in fact, no, that tank doesn't contest, or that infantry actually needed to be touching the objective, or whatever. So just a few things, but I quite like it, actually. I thought it was the pack was good. I thought it was a fairly sort of balanced selector. I think the Juggernaut selector it's called, and the missions were all good. Only thing I will say about the missions that I didn't like was that they all had almost identical deployment and setup with them. So there was no variance with that. And I think that might be just the way they like to play. Bring everything onto the table and away we go. Mm. But I don't mind some variance between missions. So, for example, compulsory reserves in one mission, no reserves in another, and maybe a deployment in another. Sort of, throwing it all out there with all sorts of different types of, deployment. But it was really good pack. I liked it.
Nice. And what about the Danish Nationals? Because that was one we were keen to get to, but unfortunately it was arranged for a weekend where we had a tournament in Britain, and so we couldn't get over for it. So I'm very keen to find out if it's one that's worth traveling across a border for.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I live there, I'd go.
Yeah.
I mean, I live in Australia and I went, so no, yeah, definitely. I thought it was very well put together, very professional. The venue is fantastic. A lot of space.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of in like a community hall, but like it's sort of on one of those indoor basketball courts. So it was quite easy to fit the 22 odd tables or whatever that there was in there. And plenty of space to put your army next to your table and all that kind of stuff. The pack was had a bit of variance to it. All the missions were different. You know, I think there was a deployment mission, one prep bomb mission, you know, two sort of like an outflanking, a no outflanking mission, and a couple of four deployment missions, a couple that you couldn't. Just really good variance with that. But it was also single platoon, which was interesting. But yeah, as you could probably tell, I kind of like having a bit of a difference, you know. Yeah, different point values, different options in how you build a list and all that kind of stuff. It makes you sort of have to think a little bit more.
So the Danish Nationals, is it 1,200 points? Was that right?
And single platoon. 1,200 single platoon. And then they also had in there, which was interesting, you couldn't have more than two of the same unit.
Yeah.
If you had a major nation, I think the miners were the only exception to the rule.
Okay.
But yeah, if you could only have two of one unit type or entry. Mm. So that was interesting. I guess just sort of
that is interesting, yeah.
Yeah. Probably more limited people wanting to maybe take four squads of Gurkhas or four squads of assault engineers with body armor or something.
Well, I was just thinking that. Could you take two squads of para Gurkhas and two squads of on the ground Gurkhas?
Normal Gurkhas.
Yeah. Yeah. I think quite a few people had that same question leading up to it. But it was sort of with the Gurkhas specifically, I think it was ruled that you could only have two Gurkha units, period.
Of any sort, yeah. Yeah. Because there weren't many British lists, were there, at the Danish Nationals? I did watch some of the videos of Bo. And it was noticeable that there really weren't many Brits there at all.
No, you're right. I didn't face any, actually.
Oh, wow.
Out of five games. Just didn't see a single one. And I remember even walking around to the tables and armies when they're all on parade and stuff, and I didn't really see too many Brits getting around. I'm not sure if that was the reason why. I think maybe all the British players decided to play Italians because there was like a quarter of the field was Italian.
Yeah.
So maybe all the British players are also Italian players. I don't know.
Yeah, they are in vogue at the moment, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, definitely. In fact, and so were cavalry. Mm-hmm. I think I saw more cavalry on the table than I've seen in my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting.
Nice.
So you played Soviets at both Not Five Sets Back and Danish Nationals. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I kind of figured I'd have to use the same army. Probably going to make it a bit hard to transport more than one across. So just for that purpose alone, I pigeonholed myself into the Soviets, I guess. I figured they're kind of pretty, they give you a lot of variety.
Mm.
So I thought it's going to probably give me a good mix between the two different sort of events I was playing in. So that's kind of why I went with the Soviets.
Yeah, what are you running in your Soviet platoon?
So I had, they're actually quite different, the lists from both the events. Well, had a couple of trucks, only one dog 19 in both, actually.
Okay.
A couple of engineers. I didn't have a Katusha. I had one Stuart. I had the Bren carriers, but as recce carriers, not transports.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. I don't really see them used that way too much. Most people do the whole guns and engineers, but
yeah, and with two light machine guns on your recce carriers.
Yep.
Yeah, nice.
Two light machine guns, recce, open top. Yeah, I quite like them. Even the open top doesn't really bother me too much. I don't think open top's that bad, to be honest. It's sort of like if someone's going to choose to shoot at a, you know, an open top vehicle with their entire squad full of rifles just to put a pin on it, so be it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't think it's the worst. I don't think it really comes up all that much.
Yeah. Well, it's casualties you're not taking elsewhere, so I totally agree.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. A couple of transports. Actually, I had a storm group squad, which I've never used before. That was probably my best unit across the two events, to be honest.
Oh, really? What include the storm group squad for anyone who doesn't play Soviets?
Yeah, so the storm group squad is it's just a squad that comes with SMGs.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get any other options. I think you can give them any tank grenades, maybe. I didn't do that. They're already expensive enough as it is. I think they come in at, they already start at 16 points. And then I think they're another, I think they're like either 17 or 18 points a man.
Okay.
So yeah, they're quite expensive. They're kind of, I guess they're trying to do a similar thing to Gurkhas, but they're just not as good as Gurkhas at doing that. and they're more expensive than Gurkhas, so go figure. But no, the one benefit they do have, though, is a rule called Arm to the Teeth, and that means that if they initiate the close quarters, they always get to roll first, no matter what.
Nice.
So that doesn't matter if the enemy unit is in a building, if you've crossed rough ground, if you're crossing an obstacle or they're defending a wood or ruin or whatever, if you initiate the combat, then you always roll first, which is nice.
So Aaron, I listened to the episode with Brad on the Official Warlords podcast about CanCon, and in the messages to us as well, you said that how you play Soviets or how you view Soviets is maybe not in line with what other people might say is the meta. So I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that. And also what you saw both at CanCon and also at the Danish Nationals. The Juggerpack may change things a little bit because of the selections there, but certainly with CanCon and Danish Nationals, where it is the standard platoon structure, what your take is on what works for you and what you've seen that also worked that you might want to try from playing over here.
Yeah, for sure. I think the main things that we see, I guess, with meta is that it's really dependent on the pack, I think, first of all, and the limitations that are put in depending on the event. So at CanCon, the main limits were around multi-launchers and flamethrowers. I think Gurkhas were limited to two. Flamethrowers were limited to two. Multi-launchers were initially limited to two. And I think maybe even Cav were limited to three. And Bamboo Spearfighters were limited to two or three as well. I mean, look, I actually don't rate Bamboo Spearfighters anyway, so that's a bit of a meh limitation in my opinion. Multi-launchers, you probably don't need any more than one anyway, so limit on two. Yeah, it is what it is. And I think flamethrowers are starting to get a bit out of favor as well anyway, so I think we're sort of seeing them getting used less and less, or at least in mass, I think. Mm-hmm.
Johnny may disagree here, but...
okay, Johnny, yep.
That's actually the point that I've made numerous times.
Yeah.
It's since that FAQ where you've got Fnatic ignores yes. flamethrowers, if you play a barbecue list, you've actually in competitive environments often created sort of a handicap for yourself because your only weapon for deleting squads, they're immune to. And so I absolutely agree that in a competitive environment, flamethrowers very much are not in vogue at the moment. But in a thematic tournament, they are a little bit powerful. And so I totally understand why people are banning them, even though they're not the be-all and end-all anymore.
Yeah, I think the way, especially too now that Italians have been, you've got the black shirts getting around in mass, or at least I saw a lot of black shirts. The Danish Nationals, there was like eight Italian players, and there was a lot of black shirts. So there's just some more free Fnatic getting around as well.
Yeah,
that's going to be quite popular. And free Fnatic tough fighters as well. So if your flamethrower doesn't finish the job, it's probably going to get charged the next turn by tough fighter Fnatic veterans. I think though with the flamethrowers, the problem I find with having too many flamethrowers in a list is the Fnatic is one thing, but I also think the bigger challenge is that you find yourself in a position where you can no longer have moves that you want to make in a game. And it's usually around the middle of the game, generally between dice 4 and dice 12, I find. So it's, you find yourself in that position where it's like, I've done a bit of playing around only in casual games, but where it's like, okay, I've got five, for example, just four or five engineers in Brens or trucks, and I can't actually do anything. Because if I move this Bren up right now, then it's going to get killed, or this truck's going to get killed because he's still got 10 dice. And the stuff I want to move at doesn't. But when you've only got sort of one flamethrower or two flamethrowers, I think the dice priority is nice. You get to use it at the start of the turn when you want, or you get to use it at the end of the turn when you want, where there's not as much threat, or you're already on top of the enemy and you want that first dice. But I think when there's like seven or eight flamethrowers, these units, they're only good at 3 inches or six, but sometimes six isn't even enough. You really want to try and get to that three. So I don't know. I find it's also a problem of dice priority, if that makes sense. I find just from playing around with it, but yeah, I think, sorry, getting a bit off topic, the meta in Australia. Yeah. I think there tends to be a few limitations on things. So we won't see as many, maybe skew lists, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's that random list that you might see in an event that's just got seven multi-launchers in there. They're not going to win. obviously. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They might have a game or two where they unfortunately kill a bunch of someone's units and they're probably too happy about it. Yeah, so we might not see those sort of lists as much. But I don't know. I don't feel like it's super, super different.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit. I think the main thing I find is that a lot of people like the historical aspect. Mm-hmm. So even though they might be trying to play competitively, they will want to build a force that is at least historical per date. I think we see that a bit more down here.
Mm.
So they don't necessarily go to the event being like, I just want to play my historical list mm-hmm. that is, you know, out of this movie or this book that I read or whatever. But it's like, I'm at least not going to mix Panzerfaust and Dogmine teams.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the rule I broke.
Okay.
In Europe, it was the first time I'd done it. I've only ever played lists that were at least historical to the front and the year. So still building them competitively, but now I broke that rule in Europe. I thought, okay, maybe I'm going to throw that rule out the window and I'm going to use Panzerfaust and Dogmines, which would have never seen the same battlefield.
That's funny because I don't know anyone doing that over here.
Oh, really?
It's never even crossed my mind. We always see people with Panzerfaust and Dogmines at the competitive tournaments. I don't know anyone who's setting that restriction on themselves in a competitive tournament. In theatrical, yes, but in the competitive, people tend to just forget the history quite a bit.
Yeah. Gloves are off and take what you want. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I think there was a bit of that. And that's probably the main difference, I think, down here, that it's sort of just, it's not a rule. It's not in the pack. Mm-hmm. It's probably just that unspoken thing that it's like, I don't want to be that guy. I don't know. Maybe it's just, we're just a bit weird down here, but yeah, look, now when it went in Rome, so I as you said, Johnny, I took the gloves off, but
yeah, because you often hear, if you know, listen to Bo and Bo's analysis of the WTC list being a good example, where the whole, you know, inexperienced medium mortar versus regular mortar with a spotter, I don't think it's a thing. It's been made into a thing that in the UK we always take medium mortars with spotters, and on the continent they always take inexperienced medium mortars. I don't think that's true, to be fair. You often hear that the US lists are maybe slightly lower in the number of order dice, and they might be tending towards maybe some heavier tanks, so maybe seeing more armor value 9 tanks, etc. So there is sort of views out there that certain countries or certain groups of countries play in certain ways, and the meta shifts in certain ways. I think the point you made earlier, Aaron, is absolutely relevant, which is it's the pack that shifts it rather than the country, if that makes sense, because you can have so many different events within one country where the pack is different, and it's going to shift from event to event and pack to pack, rather than it being the UK way of playing, the continental way of playing, the Australian way of playing, the US way of playing.
Yeah, that's a really good point, definitely, for sure. That probably sums up my thoughts on it perfectly, I think. You know, we've sort of got maybe two super competitive events down here. I mean, the Canberra one being one of them. And both of those people sort of, it's like, no one cares. Everyone knows what to expect. It is what it is. You're coming to that event to obviously play competitive, gloves off, whatever analogy it is. And then every other event outside of those two is probably a bit more maybe try and state the date or the theme or whatever. Where do you guys sit on the inexperienced mortar versus regular mortar spotter debate?
For me, it does depend. It depends on how many points I've got. So if I have the points, then I will pay for the regular with the spotter. It depends if it's single platoon and dual platoon. So if I'm playing single platoon and I haven't got a lot of HE because I've only got, you know, one artillery piece, one mortar, and maybe HE available through the tank, I'm probably more likely to put in a mortar with a spotter in order to preserve that HE. Whereas if I'm playing dual platoon and I've maybe got more access to HE, I might throw in a couple of inexperienced mortars and not worry if I lose them because it's only 35 points. So I don't have a hard and fast rule, which is always inexperienced or always regular with a spotter. Again, it's going to depend on the restrictions and so on. Might depend on the list as well. I'm playing around with an idea at the moment, which is very, very HE heavy. And therefore, I don't really care if I've got a spotter or not, because I've got more than one or more than two pieces of HE in that list. Whereas if I'm playing with a list that I've only got, you know, at the most two pieces of HE because my tank is MG heavy and is anti-infantry, I want to keep hold of my HE, so I probably will spend the points on a spotter.
Yeah, and from my perspective, it depends on which nation I'm going for, basically. If I'm playing the Finns, they'll be taking a regular with a spotter because they're very much sort of a skirmishy sort of your traditional infantry squads moving up, and then the mortars at the back. And again, it's just, it does fit that army and the low dice count of it. Mm. When I'm playing something like the US, I try to push the dice count because I'm trying to get first dice in the middle of the game. And so with those armies, I always go in experience because those extra points allow me to have extra dice, which allows me to get the higher chance of getting the first dice when I need it. Because usually around turn three, the way I play, there's a key moment at the start of turn three where I need first dice. And if I don't get at least the third dice, the game's over, basically. But my more controversial opinion is that I would never take a medium mortar. If possible, I always take a heavy. I don't see a value in the medium mortar because it doesn't delete a squad in a single hit. So you finally get that six or the four, whatever you needed, and you kill two or three men, and the squad just moves away next turn. Whereas the heavy, I find, deletes units and also is a credible threat to tanks. And so I'd always go inexperienced heavy unless I'm playing something like the Finns, and then I'll go regular heavy with a spotter.
Mm, interesting. Very interesting. Okay.
Do you sit on the medium with a spotter? Is that your viewpoint?
I've never used an inexperienced mortar of any kind.
Interesting.
Okay. I personally don't. I don't see the value in them. But I do sit on the fence. I sit on the side of the fence of the heavy mortar. I do really like a heavy mortar. If I can get one in, I will. And I agree, it is a credible threat against vehicles, especially those sort of armor 7 and 8s that you see.
Yeah.
And like, you know, there's a lot of 8s, right? Like 8s are very, very common tank. And the thing I like about using the mortar on it, especially like a Stuart, is it becomes a 4. So you only need your 50% chance of glancing when you hit, but you're forcing that tank to go early in the turn. If you've rolled the 6 and then the next turn, or sorry, if you missed the 6 in the first go, they're probably going to want to either recce, right? With on a 5 and a 6, that's risky. They don't want to lose that Stuart to just a random mortar shot at the first dice out of the bag. So I find they're either wrecking or they're using their tank so they can move with the first dice, and you're forcing that Stuart to move and then shoot at something and waste its shots because that's going to shoot at stuff that can still go down. So absolutely. I do really like that with the heavy mortar. I do agree. I used a medium. I think I used the heavy mortar in, at the Danish event, and then the medium at not 5 steps back, but both had spotters.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I can. I just don't know.
Well, I think the big thing for me with me saying the inexperience is when I'm going for sort of the high dice count armies is because it's target saturation. You've got that many other things for them that they need to be worried about that actually often the mortar, it's far enough away and it's behind cover. It's very low priority compared to, I don't know, the Ranger squad that's right on top of your sniper, or your flamethrower in the truck that's right on top of you. The mortar kind of gets forgotten about, and so it can afford to be inexperienced in the back lines.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I will go regular with the spotter if it's low dice count, because actually, if they've got the same or more dice than me, they can afford to spend a few turns just plinking at the mortar.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think there could still be some value out of them, but I've never forced myself to try and find that value.
That's a good way of putting it, yeah. Cool, okay, so what's next for you then, Aaron? You said you got an event coming up, hopefully, in a month or so, and then any more plans to go anywhere else overseas and play?
Yeah, maybe got a bit of an itch for it. Well, we've got one in Brisbane here, which is like our BrizCon, which is sort of the main event in Queensland, although I think it's already sold out. I don't know if I'll be able to get a ticket, but otherwise the next one won't be till like September, which is Moab, and that's sort of our secondary competitive event as well. It always gets big numbers, and that's in Sydney. So that would probably be the next one locally. As far as international goes, I'm not too sure. Love to try and get a team together for either the WTC or World Open War. I think based on the dates for us, maybe the WTC lines up better. I think that's around, someone did tell me the dates.
It's the end of April next year. It's pushed April, back, yeah,
yeah,
from where it was this year. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think at the moment, just with dates and times, yeah, we'll probably need a bit of time to pull a team together and organize stuff and book flights and get all that sorted. But if we can, that would probably be maybe the next time I play overseas, unless I maybe come over for, English GT or something, or maybe America. Flights to America are a bit cheaper. So I was sort of looking and seeing when their sort of bigger events are on. But yeah, the WTCs would be great. It'd be great to get a team together and get some representation from down under. And I think we're edging close to that. There's been some interest. So yeah, if you're listening, like reach out, guys, and let's get this happening so we can get another country representing it at the event. That'd be cool.
Definitely.
So that's sort of what we're gunning for at the moment, hopefully.
Yeah. And I know Russell's very keen for an Australian team to turn up at some point at World Open War, which is at the end of October. So if anyone is listening and those dates work better for you, give us a shout or give Russell Wright a shout. He'd be more than happy to put you in as a team.
Absolutely, yeah. I think there's a contingent in WA that's also trying to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd be definitely open to trying to make that happen as well. It's just a bit sooner, and I'm not sure just based on the interest that so far if we'll have enough in October. But yeah, whatever works, we're keen. I'm keen. Hopefully we can get one. It was really fun, both events, and they were really well run. And yeah, it's like, you don't know, or there might be that unknown, you know, what are the players going to be like? But like at the end of the day, we're all just sort of nerds playing with toy soldiers, all enjoying the same game, right? Like, But yeah, it was super fun, really well done, well run. Yeah, the Juggernaut guys, they all did a fantastic job. Tove, Pete, Dan, Spurley did a tremendous job, and Bo and the team in Denmark did a really good job as well. And all my opponents were fantastic. It was really good to have a bit of fun. And I think playing against someone that's from a different country adds a bit more to it as well, doesn't it? Like, it's just kind of another element. It's like, oh, this is exciting. Which you guys probably experienced already.
Yeah, it's something we both said after World Open War and WTC. Like you said, yeah, the banter's the same. You know, we're all playing the same game. We're all nerds pushing toy soldiers around. But there is an element where you're playing against someone from a different country. It's, you know, it's exciting. It's different. It's a change, etc. But there's that common ground, and yeah, the game is the game. And there might be some rules interpretations that differ from one country to another, but they're a massive stumbling block or anything.
Yeah, no, it's a really good way to put it, I think.
Well, thank you for taking the time to join us and talk through your experiences playing Bolt Action in multiple countries, your little world tour.
Yeah, congratulations again, Aaron. Yeah, well done for, you know, three you know, major events and winning all three, which is fantastic. Thanks for joining us as well. And also, hopefully people have listened to this and are inspired to, you know, to look outside of their local country or local area and get and play overseas. It's something we've talked about a lot over the last few months. And, you know, hopefully if we can get the dates lined up where we're not committed to other events, we will be, you know, jumping over to the continent at some point later on this year.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for listening. Ta-ta for now.
Ta-ta for now.
Ta-ta for now. Ha ha ha.